This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome to Houston Sports Talk with your host, Robert Land.
Thanks for checking into the best Houston sports podcast, now part of the Believe Network. And joining me is my co-host, Stephen Kerr, 65 plus years in sports journalism between the two of us. Later in the show, red flags over Fromber, Javier, Urquidy. Lots of red flags on the Astros pitching staff. And is it time to put the Chaz Chomp on the trading block? Stephen, I am not a huge OTA fan, but there was some really good news we forgot to mention last week. I think we forgot to mention this. Tank Dell looked great coming off the gunshot wound.
Yeah, he really has, Robert, and that is so good to see because he certainly is going to figure in the plans big with the Texans, you know, going into next season. I mean, just imagine what he could have done if he had stayed healthy, you know, after he got injured. Of course, he was out the rest of the season. And then on top of that, the gunshot wound, you kind of wondered, well, how quickly is he going to be able to bounce back from that? So the fact that he's at OTAs is definitely a good sign. And as far as being a fan of OTAs, I've never been a fan of them either. And apparently a lot of NFL players feel the same way. But it, at least, you know, you get a good idea of some of the new guys, especially. You kind of get to see them. And then some of the veterans kind of depending on where they are. You know, that's, but Tank Dell is definitely one that we're going to need to keep an eye on, especially when they get to training camp and then get into the preseason.
Another huge positive from OTAs, Kenyon Green. He is in better shape than he's ever looked as a Texan. Not carrying as much extra weight, although Kenyon won't say how much that he's lost. Now, many of you probably heard that, but Stephen, I bring it up because it begs the question, who do you think is more likely to have a Texans comeback season? Kenyon Green, Jalen Petrie, or Dameon Pierce?
Yeah, that's a good question, Robert, because all three of them really need to have good years. You know, Kenyon, I mean, he was a first-round pick. He's only played 14 games in two seasons. The Texans really need him. And if, you know, if he does come back healthy, of course, he'd be in that left guard competition with Jarrett Patterson and Kendrick Green. We have to remember there are two K Greens on the team. So it's a big year for him, you know, and certainly for Jalen Petrie and Dameon Pierce, you know, for basically the same reasons, just such big disappointments. I'm going to go with Jalen Petrie just because the Texans secondary certainly needs him to come back big.
Yeah, I think you know my confidence in Jalen Petrie by now. I've been very vocal about it. It's been 2 years. I'm not buying in on him. And I'm not sure that Pierce will get the opportunities Kenyon will. So I think on Kenyon for the biggest comeback. Now, Stephen, this is the other question, and this is an addendum to that. Between Kenyon Green, Petrie, or Pierce, who do the Texans need to have a great season more? And when I say need, I'm going to let you define what that means.
Well, I have to say they really need Pierce to come through. I mean, you got Joe Mixon, but beyond that, you know, you need depth at that running back position as much as anything. And, you know, the fact that Kenyon Green, yeah, he's had 2 years and Petrie's had 2 years. Pierce, you know, he had a bad season last year. And we don't know if that's because of Bobby Slowick's scheme. You know, we've talked about that or just something else going on with him. But I'm going to go with Pierce because it really need, if he could just come through, because you don't know with some of these other backs, like the one they drafted from Louisville, and then others that are kind of, you know, be in the competition. You don't really know what you have beyond that.
I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to go with Jalen Petrie more than Kenyon because there are better options at backup guard than at safety right now, I believe. I also trust Jarrett Patterson more than some of the other safeties on the roster, and I also worry about Jimmy Ward's health at safety. But, Stephen, you know, another fun reason to root for Petrie and Green's resurgence, I think we forget they're hometown kids. Kenyon played at Atascocita and Petrie at Stafford.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, you know, Kenyon Green was at A&M. So, and you know, the thing about him is he had great run blocking ability at A&M. And that's something the Texans could certainly use if you're talking about the running game. So, yeah, I would say, you know, with Pierce and Petrie, as far as who needs to have the best year, that to me, they're kind of neck and neck. But I'd have to say Kenyon really needs to have this year because he's had 2 years, just like Petrie, to get it together. And yeah, he'll definitely have some depth at the left guard position, even if he doesn't pan out. But, you know, you root for the hometown guys. I mean, you root for anybody coming back from an injury or multiple injuries in the case of Green. You want them to succeed. I mean, we're not rooting against these guys. We want them to come back and have a great year because it's better for them and it's better for the Texans.
And as far as which one of those guys needs a great season more, I'll just say that Kenyon might need a great season less just because he hasn't had the playing time that the other two guys have had so far. So we'll see on that.
Yeah. Yeah. As I said, 14 games in 2 seasons is not much. And, you know, when he was in there, he wasn't particularly effective. But again, you know, the small sample size and just the lack of health could play a part in that. And the fact that he's lost some weight, he's changed his diet, from what I understand. And of course, we hear this every year in every sport, Robert, but it's just going to have to be proven on the field is, you know, how good did your change in training regimen and losing weight, you know, how good is it really going to be? Well, you're not going to find out until you get on the field.
Yeah. Kenyon Green is a first round pick. So those guys usually get more leash than Petrie, who's a second round pick, or Damian Pierce, fourth round pick. Running backs, dime a dozen. If he doesn't look like he's doing the job, you know, you move on. But it's the NFL. We know that, Stephen. Not for long, right? Not for long.
Not for long. Yeah, not for long. That's what it could stand. No fun league, not for long. It's all those acronyms you can talk about.
You made reference to this a little bit earlier. NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reported today the NFL Players Association is working on a proposal to overhaul the offseason starting next year. As soon as next year, they want to get rid of OTAs in the spring and have a longer training camp ramp up with players reporting in mid-June to early July. Stephen, if the NFLPA thinks this is a better plan for players physically, then I have no issue with this idea.
I have absolutely no issue with it, Robert. And don't forget, they did this in the 2020 pandemic season, you know, because it totally messed everything up and they didn't have the kind of offseason schedule that you would have in normal years. And a lot of the players say they liked it. You know, they felt less beat up. Their bodies had a chance to rest. And, you know, you're talking about not being a fan of OTAs. I've never been a fan of this whole offseason program thing, Robert. And, you know, when I first started following football and when you started following it, we didn't have all these offseason training. I mean, you had some, but players were expected to be in shape when they came to camp. I mean, it's just expected. And I know times are different now, and there's a lot of other things out there. But I honestly believe this is one of the reasons that you've had so many injuries, not just in football, but really in all sports. You know, we've talked about Major League Baseball and just, you know, how much pounding pitchers take. Well, the same in football. Your body needs time. It needs downtime. It needs different actions besides the activity of whatever position you're playing, whether it's, you know, throwing ball after ball, 60, 70 yards, hitting tackling dummies, you know, and all the workouts. So I am definitely in the corner of the Players Association on this deal.
OTAs tend to be not a big deal, and you're competing against the NBA playoffs. If they start training camp in early July, for example, that's a great time if you're a sports fan to start training camp, because that's when the NBA finals is over with. You're kind of like, okay, we're now waiting for the NFL to start ramping up. It's kind of the dog days of the baseball season. There's the All-Star break around then. So the NFL can get some serious headlines if they start this, you know, pre-All-Star break or something like that, because there's some time in there that, you know, just isn't accounted for on the sports calendar. And you know, the NFL likes to get their name in there, and they like to get all of that publicity, Stephen.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And even though there wouldn't be games played necessarily that early, you know, it's just a thought, Robert, when you start thinking, oh, training camp is next week. I mean, they get you excited because, you know, football is just around the corner. That means preseason's around the corner. You get to see how guys look, you know, who's going to be the big surprise in training camp. So I just think, you know, for so many reasons that it's a good idea. You know, the thing about OTAs is I know that it probably depends, too, on where you are. You know, veterans may not necessarily, you know, if you're a veteran that's pretty locked in on your position, OTAs probably didn't mean much. But if you're a young player, you know, somebody that got drafted low in the draft, or you may be an unsigned free agent or undrafted free agent, I should say, it probably means more. But I just think from the overall standpoint of health, this is the best bet.
And if you have an opinion on OTAs or Kenyon Green and Petrie and Damian Pierce, let us know. You disagree with us on on what we said about those guys, let us know in the comments. We'd love to hear from you. And Steven, fans may also love the idea of a longer training camp because it could mean more open fan sessions. Think about that.
Well, that is possible. I mean, some teams might do that. And since you have the longer time, I know that, you know, a lot of the teams do have some open practices, but only a small handful. I mean, yeah, there are all kinds of possibilities that you could do that and make it more promotional, get more fan interaction. So yeah, that's another great reason to add to the list.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Now's the time to save 30% on wedding jewelry. Only on BlueNile.com. Make sure your wedding ring is the one with your pick of diamond and lab-grown diamond bands. All hand-finished and graded for excellence. Or surprise her with something blue she'll love for life, like a stunning pair of sapphire earrings. Blue Nile's jewelry experts are available 24/7 to help, from fit questions to style advice. Right now, get up to 30% off at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, quick reminder for Rockets fans. I just posted a Rockets draft preview with draft expert Matt Moderno a couple of days ago, in case you missed it. And tomorrow I'm doing another one with Locked On NBA Big Board's Jeff Tilene. So look for that. We've had already two, and we're about to have a third draft preview for the Rockets. So you want to keep an eye out. And let's transition over to the Astros. And as we record Tuesday afternoon, they're 5.5 games behind the West leading Mariners. Steven, this offense is allergic to consistency. The last four games, they've scored in just one inning in each of those games. It's all or nothing. You can't put this all on Bregman either.
No, you can't put it all on Bregman. And yeah, you can point to Fromber's rough first inning, but three runs, he didn't give up six or seven. He gave up three. That should be enough for an offense like the Astros to come back and overtake it. And yeah, it's just been, you know, every time you think that some guys are hitting their stride, then it's like the door closes. And you have these inconsistencies where they pick up one run here, two runs in one game, and it's just maddening. And this is a big series for the Astros because they really are within striking distance of catching the Mariners, you know, despite the horrible start and all the negative things we've been saying about them for the last month and a half or so, Robert. They're still in contention to take over the division, but this four-game series in Seattle is big to help them do that, and losing the first game. And, you know, as you said, we're recording Tuesday afternoon, so depending on when you hear this, it may be a moot point, but yeah, the offense just really needs to start getting it together, especially with the pitching being the way it is.
The veteran leaders have flat out stunk in the clutch. Altuve, Yordan, and Bregman all have an OPS with runners in scoring position below, Steven, 638.
Yeah, that's not good. And those are the guys that you expect to come through. And Yordan is, of course, you know, we've talked about it before. I don't know what's going on with him, Robert. It's hard to say. I mean, he is human. I guess we're finding that out. He's not somebody that just gets in a brief slump and can come out of it all the time. We're finding out just how human Alvarez is. And we've talked about Bregman ad nauseum. Altuve, you know, he got off to a great start, but he's kind of cooled down a bit. And that's certainly not the right time to do that with so many others struggling.
How concerned are you about Christian Javier's future? That's my next one, Steven, because this is the second stint on the injured list this season. He hasn't had that swing and miss stuff the last two seasons now. His K per nine rate has gone from 11 in 21 and 22 to actually over 11 to 8.8 last year to 7 right now, more than 4 strikeouts per 9 innings less. He'll be making over $21 million in 26 and 27. And Steven, it could be another Lance McCullers situation.
Well, that's what worries me, Robert, is, you know, when you start talking about multiple problems like this, you know, is Tommy John surgery on the way, or is something else on the way? And it couldn't have come at a worse time. I mean, there's never a good time for a pitcher to get injured, but man, couldn't have come at a worse time the way the Astros pitching staff has just been obliterated with injuries. And just when we think that Jose Urquidy is coming back, now he's been shut down again. So you've got two guys that, you know, you thought were on the way back. I mean, Javier, he's had a couple of starts since having that rehab assignment. We thought that was going to be the case with Urquidy. So now you got both guys shutting down again. It is definitely a concern. And yeah, with Javier, you're counting on him so much, him and Fromber, to kind of bounce back. And again, we don't know how much of that is due to how much they threw last year. You know, you can always throw that in the mix. But regardless of what the reason is, it's very concerning, especially when you look down the pike of, you know, what's going to happen with him.
There's Christian Javier. You mentioned Jose Urquidy. Also, let me ask you this. Did the Astros dodge a bullet when Fromber didn't sign a contract extension? Fromber's ERA is 4.34 with a 2.77 batting average against. The second half of last season was terrible, Steven. Even if this is fixable, his price in free agency is dropping when he hits the market in a year and a half.
Oh, yeah. I've always said that I don't think you should re-sign him for such a big contract, because I needed to see more of a sample size from the Fromber that we saw a couple of years ago. And even then, Robert, I mean, with pitching injuries the way they are now, I just, you know, something has to be done as far as these guys signing these pitchers to such huge contracts, because you're really taking a risk, really, with anybody or almost anybody. And Fromber is certainly a case to be made for not signing him. But, you know, then the question becomes, do you want to start trading some of these guys in their final year of their contract if you know you're not going to sign them and at least get something for them? You're not going to get a huge haul for a player in their final year with a rental type situation. But, you know, could that be something we could talk about with Fromber down the road, is at least get something for him instead of just letting these guys walk away?
Yeah, don't you got to sort of weigh that against draft compensation that you would get if you let him walk?
Yeah, there is that too. But, you know, if you can get some young prospects and maybe one or two, you know, even if it's in lower A ball or just something, instead of just walking away with nothing with these guys and then making a qualifying offer, you know, and you do get a draft choice when you do that if they sign somewhere else. But yeah, it's a question that, you know, that's just mulled over. But the fact that they didn't re-sign him, I don't think that's a bad move, certainly not at this point.
I don't think there's any doubt right now that Bregman is getting a qualifying offer at best.
Yeah, and it just makes that Lance McCullers contract just, you know, all the more of an eyesore when you talk about, you know, especially with his injury history. I mean, Fromber's been pretty durable up until this year. He's had, you know, a couple things now and then, but he certainly hasn't had the major injury issues that Lance McCullers, Jose Urquidy, you know, and some of these guys have had. But I still, you know, say that even with a pitcher like him, even without the injury situation, just the inconsistencies that he's been having would be enough to make me back off.
All right, let's transition over from the pitchers to one of the Astros' key hitters the last couple of years, but not this year so far. Is it time to trade Chaz McCormick, Steven? And I ask this because it's not like Jake Meyer's ascendancy is the only reason, but it's a huge factor. I'm thinking about this because he's better defensively in the outfield. So if they're close at the plate, it's a factor between him and Jake. But also, Lo Perfido showed real promise. He got sent down for that lead weight we call Jose Abreu. Lo Perfido is also a better and more versatile defender. And you're obviously, you got Yordan and Dubon who can play the outfield. And very quietly, Steven, very quietly, Pedro Leon is living up to his hype. Finally, he's hitting .290 with 51 RBIs and a .923 OPS in Sugarland.
Well, you could make a case for trading Chaz, you know, but there are a lot of ifs in that situation. Can Jake Meyers continue the pace that he's on? Can Joey Lo Perfido, you know, he had such a short sample size. He played pretty well. His strikeout rate's still a little bit higher than I would like it to be for a major league hitter, but I think it was a good thing that they sent him down just because he hadn't been playing much at all lately. Joey needs at-bats. He needs to continue to play, and the only way he was going to get that was at AAA. So, yeah, you've got a glut of outfielders when you throw those other guys in the mix. And if Pedro Leon, you know, they signed him. They had high hopes for him a couple of years, 3 years ago. He hasn't shown that until this year. So you have to hope that he can continue the pace that he's on, because I think they're tabbing him as, you know, a guy that can play center field too. So if you put it that way, if you're banking on all of these things happening, it's not a far-fetched idea to trade a guy like Chaz McCormick and perhaps, you know, get some kind of pitching help, even if it's, you know, some middle relief pitching in your bullpen, because you certainly could use that too. So there are a number of reasons you can make a case for it. But the caveat is you got to hope that some of these guys that you're high on but have very small sample sizes pan out, or that you don't have a bunch of injuries in that positions.
Yeah, there's also some guys in the minors that, you know, I think they're high on in the outfield. It's easier to replace outfielders than it is to replace other positions. It's easier to find outfielders than it is to replace other positions.
Well, it certainly is. And, you know, Jacob Melton is a guy that you could talk about, you know, put in that conversation. And, of course, you know, whether you resign Kyle Tucker would play a part in that too. So, yeah, if it's a position, like if it was third base, for instance, you know, all the trade rumblings, you know, is Alex Bregman going to be traded? You know, it's hard to trade a guy like Bregman because third baseman, really good third baseman, are hard to find. Outfield is a different story. So, yeah, there are a lot of cases you can make for trading a Chaz McCormick. The guy seemed to improve every year up until this year. He hasn't been relatively healthy throughout most of the season, so that may play a part of it. But if you're going to part with somebody, and if you need assets, especially, you know, in the pitching aspect, then you're going to have to give up somebody of value, and Chaz is certainly a valuable piece that you could possibly put on the table.
Well, I am not going to make you put on your Joe Espada cap, but I wish somebody could explain to me why Alex Bregman bats forth every single game, even though he has stunk this year over and over and over again. This is a team that needs as many good at-bats after Kyle Tucker in the lineup, you know, as hot as he's been. I just don't like Bregman being the guy that's always responsible for knocking guys in behind Tucker and Altuve and Yordan. The other thing, Steven, and this is even more confusing to me, why isn't Mauricio Dubon playing more third base at least once or twice a week, if nothing else, for Alex Bregman? Because that's why you have Mauricio Dubon, and he has hit in the clutch this year, unlike Alex Bregman. And you have this glut of outfielders right now. You've got Chaz, who's healthy again, but you had Lo Perfetto, who was playing well. You have Jake Myers. You've got Yordan. You've got, you know, Caratini, who can DH for you when Yonner plays catcher and gives you another good bat because he's played well. Why is this insistence on Mauricio Dubon's only playing the outfield and Alex Bregman's got to play every day, like we're trying to protect the Lou Gehrig streak or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, Espada has definitely been tinkering with his lineup quite a bit lately, and I know it's trying to get some guys going. If I'm not mistaken, he put Tucker in the second spot Monday night against Seattle. And Tucker, I don't think he got a hit Monday night. He certainly didn't light up the place. He didn't hit any more home runs.
He's been playing a lot in the second spot, I thought.
Yeah, well, he has been, but, you know, he's put some other guys in there. He's put Pena in there. I don't know, Robert. This whole offense, I mean, you go down the line of guys who probably should be put down further in the batting order, but there's so many of them, you can only put so many of them down there.
But the thing is, he's tinkered with everything but Alex Bregman, and Alex Bregman, as long as Jose Abreu's not around, is the only guy on the roster that's just been horrible. He's the only one.
Well, I think he did bat Bregman sixth a few times.
And then he hit well for like 3 days.
Yeah.
And they brought him back to the fourth spot, and then he sucked again.
So yeah, he probably should have kept him in that spot. If he's hitting well, let him hit there for a while and then maybe bring him back at some point. But yeah, I think he pulled the plug a little too soon on Bregman in that spot. And as far as Dubon, I mean, you only just recently got Chaz back. And, you know, Dubon can hit. He's going to get you the hits that you need, you know, and he could even play some first base if you really needed him to. He's the guy you're going to move around a lot. While you're not playing him at third base, you know, especially with the Astros hardly have any off days right now, you could give Bregman at least one day of rest every now and then, not even help him in his batting, and put somebody like Dubon at third base.
Yeah, I just thought Lo Perfetto was playing well. Myers is playing out of his mind. Those two guys should have been just playing regularly in center and left, and Mauricio Dubon should have been bouncing between the hole that is the third base spot and first base. He could have been platooning with John Singleton. He could have been batting against lefties. Not that Singleton has been terrible against lefties, but he's a lefty. And typically the splits, you know, this year I looked at the splits and there is a little bit of a difference between him,
right,
lefties and righties.
Yeah. I mean, there are just so many possibilities, and it's a good problem to have for him, especially if the team could just play better. If some of these guys were hitting, you know, he'd really have a problem. So it's interesting, I guess, no matter which scenario you point to, there's going to be somebody to criticize it. So it's hard for me to be really hard on him.
I don't think anybody is going to criticize Alex Bregman being moved down in the lineup. Everybody agrees on that.
No, I don't think you're going to criticism about that. That's why I said he should have probably kept him there a bit longer than he did. As far as everything else, you know, whether playing Dubon at third base or
Nobody would criticize that either. There's not one Astro fan that is real happy with Alex Bregman right now. I promise you that.
No, even defensively at third base, he's had some issues too. So
when a guy's struggling, you also should take him out of the lineup occasionally. Maybe he needs a little, you know, rest or a refresher or, you know, they do that all the time. Again, this is not Yordan or Kyle Tucker, who's proven like they're MVP candidates the last two or three years. Alex Bregman, you know, has had some issues the last couple of years. He's had some slumps. He's terrible early in the season. We know this.
Yeah, and it's interesting that, you know, there was talk in spring training before the season began. Espada even came out and said that he's going to give more of the veterans more time off this year. Well, I don't have the numbers in front of me to tell you, but it just doesn't seem that way to me, especially with the stretches that they've gone through. You know, they played, I think in April, it was like, what, 20 games in 21 days. And now here this month, they've had a stretch of, you know, a similar stretch where they only have one day off in a couple of weeks. So, that's my only question, Robert, is if he's talked about that, why haven't we seen it?
Yeah, it's confounding. I don't agree with some of the criticisms that Espada has taken early in the year, but the Bregman thing really ticks me off. I know his hands were tied with Abreu. So I understand what the issue, I mean, Abreu seems to be a Jeff Bagwell as manager decision, not a Joe Espada as manager decision, but like this Bregman thing, this is 100% on Espada, 100%.
Well, yeah, as far as we know it is. And you know, speaking of Abreu and Jeff Bagwell, Bagwell was actually one of the guys working with Abreu while he was in the Florida Coast League. So that might add some more credence to what you're saying. And I'm kind of surprised they just threw him in the lineup at first base on Monday night. He did get a hit. I think he hit a ball, over 102 miles an hour.
RBI.
So at least he didn't, and got an RBI. So he didn't stink it up. But, you know, you're going to need that a bigger sample size to see whether he's really coming back or not. But, you know, they just threw him right in there. I don't know if I'd have put him at DH, though, but maybe just worked him in maybe a game or two later. So that's just going to be another thing. We're going to have to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I agree with everybody out there that's like, why wasn't Singleton playing first base? He's been better defensively this year. And, you know, Abreu didn't exactly remind me of Keith Hernandez last year either.
Well, and, you know, in that Monday night game, I mean, there was a play he could have made. I mean, he may have taken a bad hop. It was kind of a hit and miss type of thing. But I think a pro makes that play, but Abreu did not. But it's not like he was terrible at first base like some of the other plays we've seen. So, you know, all you can do is just root for the guy to come back, because the Astros offense could certainly use it. And he definitely needs to get better defensively at first base.
All right, Steven, I got to talk for a second about the loss of Bill Walton. And if Walton stayed healthy, we're probably talking about a top 10 to 15 NBA player. He was top 10 in college basketball history for sure. Maybe top three at UCLA. His team's record at UCLA was 86 and 4, including two undefeated seasons, 30-0. He started his college career 73-0. Don't forget, he didn't lose a game his last 2 years in high school. He had 48 games at UCLA with at least 15 points and 15 rebounds. In the 73 NCAA Finals against Memphis State, he was 21 of 22 from the floor, 44 points, which is still the record in an NCAA Finals game. He carried the Portland Trailblazers to their one and only championship in 1977. He was similar to Jokic as a passer, but with elite defense. I mean, I'm not saying he was Jokic as a passer, but he was very similar to him, and he had the defense to go along with it. And I'm sure you remember, Steven, when he won the Sixth Man of the Year for the Boston Celtics in 1986, they beat the Twin Towers Rockets in the finals. And after they won, Walton went to Larry Bird's house. And I love this story. Larry's wife answers the door, but she said Larry was in bed. Larry comes out and says, "I'm not doing this tonight," to Walton. And Walton replied, "Don't worry, I don't even need you." Then he tells Larry he'd be there when Larry woke up in the morning. And sure enough, Walton was there in the morning when Larry woke up. He brought a bottle of whiskey. He drank it and he waited for Larry Bird to wake up in the morning.
Yeah, Rockets fans that remember the 86 will certainly never forget that, as much as they'd like to. You know, the first time that I saw Bill Walton play, Robert, was when he was at UCLA. And man, talk about imposing. Gosh, he's just amazing. Now, I do remember watching the game that they finally lost. You know, they had that, 79 some odd game winning streak, and they lost to Notre Dame. And I remember, watching that game and how it looked like UCLA was going to win another game. They were beating them handily. I think they were up by 12 points with about 3.5 minutes left. And Notre Dame somehow, even with Bill Walton there, come back and win the game. But, you talk about the injuries, and yeah, there's no question Bill Walton could have been an even better NBA player than he was. But, he was still an MVP. He was a six-man award winner, as you mentioned, on championship teams. I mean, the guy was a winner. But what's interesting, it's kind of like John Madden. When John Madden got into broadcasting and did so well at it, a lot of people forgot what his former profession was. He was head coach of the Oakland Raiders. If you're not careful, those of us, of course, who watched Bill Walton remember him as a player. But this generation, probably just remembers him as being a TV analyst. But man, what a great player he was when he was healthy.
Yeah, I'm 52, and I don't remember a time in my life. There wasn't a time in my life that Bill Walton wasn't a part of it. He started playing college in the early 70s, and he's playing all the way till 90, and then he becomes a broadcaster and one of the more interesting and fun and crazy broadcasters ever. And then there's another Walton Rockets connection, Stephen, because while Walton was playing his high school ball in San Diego, the Rockets began play in San Diego also. While he was in high school, he practiced against Elvin Hayes and Pat Riley.
Yeah, that's some pretty good company right there. And it's just funny what a small world that is. Whether you agreed with what Walton said when he was on the TV analyst, because he did say some crazy things. You had to say, the guy was good at what he did, both as a broadcaster and as a player. And he certainly changed the game of, you talk about how dominant a college basketball player he was. I mean, there are just very few nowadays that you can say, especially with the way college basketball has changed. I mean, the guy was dominating for several years. We don't see that much in college anymore.
The other thing you have to talk about with Bill Walton is just him personally, and he always stood up for what he believed in. John Wooden, his coach at UCLA, was not a fan of this, but he got arrested protesting the Vietnam War when he was at UCLA. He was right about that. He wrote a letter asking for Richard Nixon's resignation. Wooden didn't like it, but he was right about it, and Wooden had to say, or do a mea culpa on that. And needless to say, he was one of one as just a personality, absolutely unforgettable. I'd give anything for his energy and his positivity. It's something that I wish I had, and everybody who met him, they just left with a great story. Never, ever heard a bad word about him. And Stephen, he was just all about peace and love.
It's interesting that you say that, Robert, because I heard just today, and I don't remember who it was that interviewed him, but they asked him a question about life and how he felt. And he said, "I just want more." He said, I want more of life. I want more love. I want more reading. I want more time." And this was, I believe, back in 2021. He just wanted to live more. And he certainly did that up to his very last day. Even through the battle with cancer, he kept it up as much as he could. So yeah, you talk about a guy who was positive yet outspoken. I mean, that sounds like an oxymoron, but he was both. And he did just enjoy life. And that's why I think in that interview, he's like, "Man, I just want to keep living. I want more of it."
And I'll finish the show. You mentioned a quote there. I'll finish the show with one of his quotes. And of course, he called himself the luckiest man in the world. That was the documentary that ESPN had on him as well. And Walton once said that when the sun comes up in the morning, I say to myself, "What can I do to make things better for as many people as possible?" To all of you watching and listening, be Bill Walton today.
You're listening to Houston Sports Talk.
Hey, don't forget to support us by subscribing and commenting on YouTube. You can always listen to us on Spotify, Apple, or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about us and share our show links on social media. Spread the word, everybody. Thanks for listening.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry,
as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.